1,000 points and why it's so volatile and what's going on. And we listen to the talking heads in Washington, and they're putting on a big kabuki theater back there trying to convince us that they know what's happening and they know how to fix it. But when you look closer at what happened, it becomes fairly apparent that the market didn't just fall off the edge. It was pushed. And we get into that in our book. We look at the people who have been given license to steal, the people who have created a conspiracy with Washington and Wall Street. And really, it's the Washington windbags and the Wall Street whiz kids who have got this thing going that is pretty good for them, but for the rest of us, it's a real mess. And so we looked in the first part of the book at what created that plunge and why the markets are behaving the way they are. And in fact, though we wrote the book 6 months ago, we pretty much called what was going to happen. I'll just give you one quote and then we'll move on from there. On page 127 of the book, we wrote, quote, "In throwing trillions at the economy, there has to be at least a few billion in financial gains, and there will be. From the Fed, we'll hear cautious talk of recovery. And Americans will fast and furiously shovel what remains of their wealth back into U.S. equities. And right about then, a merry band of international bankers who've been lying in wait will step out of the shadows and crash the markets. And Mr. Obama's economic recovery will go into the record books as a goose egg, a big zero." End of quote.
And, of course, a lot of people, a lot of good people who got back in the market are going to lose their shirts. We'll be back in just a moment with Lee Troxler. All right, Lee, pick up the story there.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Oh, when we return or now?
Right now.
Okay. The people behind this go back quite a few years, and we trace them pretty much back to George Soros, who back in 94 crashed the Bank of England, and having made quite a handsome payout that day, decided, well, what am I going to do now? And he set his sights on a bigger prize, and he saw the U.S. markets as his next gain. He didn't think much of the U.S. markets. Being a fairly hypocritical old sod, he thought that, you know, capitalism is a way for me to get rich, but I certainly don't like it. And so he began doing what he had to do to make money here, and that was to figure out how to tear apart the rules that had protected the market, that had created genuinely free markets for a very long time. And so you don't just tear those rules apart, you have to make it happen. So he began currying favor with the people in Washington who were most easily compromised. At the time, that was a group of people who had been thoroughly discredited by the Reagan Revolution. They were liberal in their views on the world. They called themselves liberals, socialists, Democrats, progressives, whatever their wording. They didn't have any power. Their ideas had been thoroughly discredited. And so this guy comes along, and even though he's kind of a slimy guy, and, oh, boy, to be seen in public with him isn't going to look too good, but he's got billions of dollars. And that's got to be good for something. So he began working with this group of people to tear apart the systems that had protected the free markets for a long time. He didn't just work with liberals. There were plenty of good Republicans in Congress who went along with this. And in the Clinton years, they took apart Glass-Steagall Act. They took apart some of the rules that had created these walls between investment banks and banks. They took apart the systems that had allowed our housing markets to be strong and vital. They took these apart and they turned them into these kind of corporate socialist, these state capitalist beasts that they could control. Just as China has state capitalism today, we have state capitalism. They create a system where the politicians could get errands, curry favor, get contributions from these wealthy people. And in return, they could loosen up a few rules and let the wealthy make more and more money, fleece us. It got so bad that we...
Hold that thought, Lee. We'll be back here in just a moment as we bring all the rest of our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stanley Leibovitz saying that certainly we saw a small group of people, one of them certainly would be George Soros, move to destroy the foundation of our economic system. Now, after he destroyed the Bank of England and taken down the Bank of England and seriously, damaged the English economy and made billions of dollars for himself, then he set his eyes on the United States. And how do you dismantle an economic system that works pretty well, that simply has given great prosperity? Well, you certainly do away with the Glass-Steagall Act, as they did back in 1999. And basically that was, of course, to keep the banks from beginning to sell stocks and to sell insurance. And banks are supposed to be into banking, not into speculation. But this is what happened. You took down Glass-Steagall, and the banks began to do this sort of thing. We had a housing market with all sorts of protections, and we simply repealed all of those. And the politicians, lots of them, of course, getting large sums of money by one means or another from Mr. Soros and his friends, basically dismantled the economic system that we had that protected the little guy and prevented this massive collapse that we're seeing today. This did not happen. The state attorney generals, we know, for instance, every one of them back in 2002 could see the coming collapse of the housing market, tried to intervene against the predatory loan practices that were being utilized at that time, and of course getting lenders, trying to force lenders to adhere to the laws and traditions of having, you can't sell a house to a guy who can't afford a house, for nothing down and no interest at all for a certain period of time and no principal. But they did that, adjustable rate loans, liar's loans, all sorts of things they did. But you pick up the story, Lee, because they really did, of course, allow all sorts of financial practices that anybody with two brain cells would know would lead to disaster.
They did it, and they're continuing to do it, and that's the greatest crime of all. We're all vaguely familiar with what happened to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those institutions were used for two purposes. One was to reward Democratic contributors with high-paying jobs, so the guys at the top of those organizations could make tens of millions of dollars a year in salaries. But the real purpose was to give housing guarantees to people who couldn't afford homes. And so you had all these people who were getting homes that they didn't deserve, they couldn't make the payments on. And when the market crashed in 2008, you think it would have been a wake-up call. You think they would have said, okay, gosh, we pushed that one a little too far. We need to shore up our finances. But no, the same thing is going on now because Mr. Obama doesn't want to kick anybody out of their house, and he wants to continue to get those big paybacks from his pals. So what they're doing is they're taking all the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac toxic mortgage mess that we knew about, and they're transferring a lot of it over to an organization called Ginnie Mae, another sweet-sounding organization. And when Ginnie Mae owns it, it's no longer just a partly owned by government, partly owned by private pool of mortgages. It's now owned entirely by government. In other words, it's owned by you and me. We're the people who now own all the bad debt in this country, all the bad mortgage debt, I mean. And so there's going to come a time when people can't afford to continue making their payments. They're going to default. Those houses are going to be guaranteed by us taxpayers. And that's going to add another $1 trillion by latest estimates to the already huge and incomprehensibly huge federal deficit.
But what's even more incredible, Lee, is that at the present time, Fannie Mae is actually making loans to people who, once again, can't afford the homes. I mean, they don't even have money for a down payment, but the government gives them $8,000 to buy a home, and so that's, they can use that as a down payment. Then they come up with these loans, certainly adjustable rate mortgages, and these are people that they know will not be able to pay that, and we're setting ourselves up for another housing collapse. And the average individual out there has no idea what's going on.
That's absolutely right. We're creating a culture that accepts this, a culture that says, okay, the banks messed with us. They ripped us off, so I'm going to get even. I'm going to borrow at $8,000. I'm going to get a house, and I'm going to stay in it for 2 years until they kick me out. And I'm going to do it again. So they've got this idea that that there's no responsibility. There's no accountability at the highest levels, So why should individuals be responsible? Why should individuals be accountable? By creating that culture of slackerness, of not caring, you have the biggest problem of all. That's at the root of everything that we have here. There is this growing sense that there are different views of this world, two different views of our country, not red state or blue state or Republican or Democrat or conservative or liberal. There's, in our view, as we talk about in our book, there's really two different groups of people here. There's a group of traditionalists and a group of revisionists. And if we'd like to talk about them, that's at the root of all of this.
However, you go right ahead.
Okay. The traditionalists, I think, are a lot of the people who listen to the show here. They've got they still believe that America is the best thing this world's ever known. It's a place unique in history to be honored, exalted, and no equal. We have no equal in providing freedom and opportunity for all. That view carried this country for a long time. It carried us through the robber barons, through shysters, through greedy people, through Ponzi schemes. There was always a goodness in this country that was held by a majority of the people, and it's why this country continued to grow and remain a shining city on a hill. But something happened. This new set of values, and I call them revisionist, and they were shaped by a single anomaly in our long history. They were shaped by Vietnam. And any mistakes we might have made in that war became this fractured prism through which the revisionists judged everything. And all of a sudden, the unquestioning goodness of, the unquestioning acceptance of American goodness was viewed as sappy or naive or even knuckle-dragging. And so you have these revisionists who came up and they viewed this country as a corrupt, valueless country, and so they decided that they would continue in that vein. They would go in and they would rob the banks not through the way Bonnie and Clyde did it, though they enjoyed that movie a lot. They would do it by creating artificial ways, creating artificial money, creating derivative products that weren't real. Because if something's not real, it's a lot easier to mess with it, to work it, to turn it to your financial advantage. And that group of people has taken root in Wall Street. They've taken root particularly in one political party in Washington, and they don't really care about restoring the core American value, the value that we need for this country to succeed. They don't care about that. They care only about asset stripping the country, because why should you save America? It's not what's so good about it anyway. So that's the situation we find ourselves in.
All right, fine. Well, then some of the other things that have happened as far as the destruction of our society, there are other people besides Soros. You mentioned certainly George Soros as one of the major architects of the destruction of our economy. Who else would you put in the same category?
We have that whole group of banks that we know that are now not only too big to fail, but too big to succeed. Before, they were just investment banks trying to make some good money. Goldman, Citadel, J.P. Morgan Chase, won several companies, the Blackstone Group. But what became of this group of people is they got an opportunity to cheat the markets, and they did it. They got an opportunity first through the tearing apart of the regulations. But then they got it through the passage of time and the evolving of technology. You go back to the 60s, we're all probably familiar with that MIT professor who figured out how to beat Vegas, and he developed some pretty amazing algorithms for figuring out financial probabilities. And the things he did and published in his book and people learn from, successive generations learn from, came to be the basis for how they geared the computers on Wall Street. Today, we have these massive computers, the size of tennis courts, entire computer banks, just huge banks of computers that have the ability to front-run every trade that you and I make. They have the ability to make a trade in a millisecond, which is faster than you can blink your eye. And so if I go down to my Schwab account and I buy 100 shares of Apple, because I think they're selling some good products these days. And when my trade goes in, their computers see it happen and make a probabilistic determination about whether or not that's a good trade, and they front run it. They can do this billions of times an hour, and sure, they only make a few pennies every time they trade, but a couple billion pennies an hour adds up. And that's the system they have in place now. 70% of every trade made in the markets today is made by these computers. All these computers, about 5-10 of them, major computers by the major trading houses, all using pretty much the same program. So if they all see the markets the same way, very sophisticated systems for deciding what you ought to do in the markets, they all see them the same way, and one little thing goes crazy in the market, all the computers automatically sell, automatically buy, and so you have a situation where they can game the market anytime they want. And see, if they suddenly get nervous and they think that they've got to get themselves out of the market, like it happened last week, they all get out right away, a 1,000-point plunge, the markets crash, and all the rest of us are left having no idea what happened, no chance to get our money back if we lost any, and no idea what to do next.
Well, Chris, one of the things to me was certainly the major banks, Goldman Sachs, certainly Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, were creating these collateralized debt obligations. They were taking these fraudulent loans that had been made, money lent to people who could never make the payments on their home loans, and they bundled these together into something called collateralized debt obligations, and then they sold them to banks. First of all, they got the rating companies to give them a AAA rating, which, of course, they shouldn't have had because they were going to fail. And then, of course, they bought insurance policies because, well, you got an insurance policy, you can't lose, but there was no money behind the insurance company. And that, of course, I think led to this housing crash.
Yep.
Go right ahead, Lee.
And the thing to understand now, for those of us out,
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
He's just talking about how these, suddenly the big banks, they have gamed the system so that they can make fabulous amounts of money. They have these massive computers. They can certainly manipulate the market with it by the various machinations that they use. And the bigger banks are making money every day. They make money, you know. You would think they might lose money occasionally, but they never lose. They make the markets. They make things happen. And these people are making fabulous sums of money. I mean, you're talking, certainly, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, paying bonuses somewhere between $15 and $24 billion a year to their employees. That's pretty good money. I wish I was getting part of that, don't you?
Instead of being the one paying it.
Right.
Because they're not paying the bonuses, we are. And that's the worst part of it. I'll be the last person to throw a stone at a capitalist. I don't have a problem with people making money. I have a problem with people gaming the system so that they make money. And when after 2008, when Wall Street decided they needed to become wards of the government and get all the bailout money from us, at that point, they gave up the opportunity to make money the way they did before. But they should have, rather, but they didn't. I mean, Goldman Sachs went from becoming an investment bank to becoming a bank. And what that meant is they could go up to the Federal Reserve window, and they could borrow, $10 billion, say, $10-20 billion. What do they need today? At zero interest or near zero interest, they could then go out and they could use that money for what purpose? That money that we taxpayers gave them. Could they use that money to shore up the financial system? Well, that would have been a good thing to do. To help people who really legitimately need assistance with their mortgages? Not a bad thing to do. To make sure that the poor widow up at the window there doesn't lose all of her money that she's invested in a lifetime and in her pension. Another good use of that money. But no, those weren't the uses of the money. They used that money that we gave them free of charge to trade. Not only to trade, but to cheat, to front run the system, to make billions of dollars because we let them. Because nobody in Washington wanted to stop them. That's criminal. That's far worse than anything Madoff did. It's far worse than anything that has happened in this country, perhaps since the country began.
But even, Lee, even worse than that was that they were selling these collateralized debt obligations, these massive big bonds, to various investors and telling them they were good investments. At the same time, Goldman Sachs was shorting that. In other words, anticipating they were going to go down and working hand in glove with a man named Jay Paulson. Apparently, he's got a very large hedge fund. He was putting together these bonds that they knew would fail. And then Goldman Sachs was telling people to buy them, while Mr. Paulson, a good friend of theirs, was shorting these so that when they collapsed, why the people lost their shirts. And this is why insurance companies lost so much money, and many of them are on the border of insolvency, and the same thing with pension funds. Goldman Sachs, you know, this is totally fraudulent. Well, the federal government's going to maybe fine them a little something, but the people who lost their money should be able to bring lawsuits against them. But Goldman Sachs can come up with lawyers and pay them and drag this out indefinitely, so the people will never be compensated. And yet this was, in my estimation, criminal activity to recommend something on one hand while you're actually betting it's going to fail. But, of course, nobody from Goldman Sachs will ever go to prison for it.
Not a chance. They'll get fined, like you say. What? Let's, what do we think, maybe $1 billion?
Maybe a billion dollars. I mean, they can make that in a couple of days in the market.
That's right, 2 days, isn't it? That's what they make in 2 days. And you and I can't sue them, but Greece can. And Greece is going to probably sue them for doing taking those collateralized debt obligations over to Greece and messing with the economy over there, just like they did here. So when Greece sues these banks, who do you think is going to pick up the tab for the legal bills and for the costs of those settlements if in fact the cases go to fruition? I think that comes back to we taxpayers.
Well, we already said, they're too big to fail. We've got to keep them going. We've got to fund them. That's why they took over AIG. AIG was a means of actually funneling American taxpayer dollars into Goldman Sachs. We gave AIG $185 billion, which they immediately turned around and gave to good friends at Goldman Sachs, at J.P. Morgan, Chase. And then, of course, they paid these fantastic bonuses with American taxpayers' dollars. The average American doesn't understand what's going on. This is a scam. This is something with the greatest scam of all time. And the rich get richer, and we say they're just too big to fail. We can't. Why? If they failed, why the whole system had come down? And that's why we've got to keep giving them more and more and more money. And what we're doing, we're seeing the greatest transfer of wealth from the common people, and from certainly our pension funds, from our future, to a small group of elitists, very powerful and, in my estimation, very wicked human beings in the banking industry. Well, this is Dr. Stan Lee. Go right ahead.
Well, it was a pleasure listening to you there, Dr. Stan. I can't help but wonder what's going to come next. Will there be some hope coming out of Washington? Will there be a chance for us to somehow turn this around? I look at the Tea Party movements. I look at disgruntled people across the spectrum, the people out here where I am and in Idaho trying to just get rid of both parties. And I'm hopeful that things will change, but I feel that what's going to probably have to happen is a generation, the baby boomer generation, as it's known, is going to have to pass on into the good night, and some kids are going to have to come on up, and they're going to have to want it. They have to want to create a better country. And until that happens, those of us with wealth to protect, those of us who have families to feed, had better be careful how we place our investments. Otherwise, it isn't going to look too good for us.
Well, my concern is that so many people today are getting back in the stock market. After all, they tell us about the green shoots. They don't tell us the green shoots are poison ivy, but they tell us the green shoots, things are getting better. Don't you have more confidence in the economy? Oh, yes, and certainly Ford is going to take on 175 workers. They're going to open up a plant with 175 workers. Isn't that wonderful? Ford is beginning to hire once again. 175 workers. But the trouble is that we keep losing more jobs every single month. So you pick up the story there, Lee.
Well, the jobs picture is going to be the one thing that makes a difference, because if unemployment continues to rise, and it is, there will be a nice bump for Mr. Obama this summer with so many workers hired for the census taking and for some other seasonalities that are going to help him. But come the fall, when the weather starts to turn and unemployment has not, because there's just not enough, the businesses can't be hiring again. Why can't they? Because they've got no capital. Why don't they have any capital? Well, because it's all on Wall Street being swallowed up. And so when unemployment stays high and you've got people in the streets who haven't worked in a long time and they're hungry and they're angry, we're going to have some violence. We're going to have some people who are not willing to accept this substandard lifestyle they've been given. And Mr. Obama has been an excellent, he has got high marks in stoking class rivalry and in pitting one class against another. But
hold that thought, Lee. We'll be back here in just a moment with Lee Troxley. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Lee Troxler, his book, of course, Killing Wealth, Freeing Wealth. And so, Lee, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get hold of you, how they can get to your website, how they can get copies of your book. And incidentally, if you're out in the listening audience and you have a question for Lee, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Don't call 1-800-24-LIBERTY or you're in for a surprise, but go right ahead.
Okay. The book, Killing Wealth, Freeing Wealth, is the second book from my writing partner, Floyd Brown, and we did Obama Unmasked before the election, and what we learned from that exercise led to this book, and it's now available at Amazon and most of the major bookstores, and we have a website where we are following up and updating what was in the book and providing additional information along the way as to how to best invest. And that site is freeingwealth.com.
Well, I know a lot of people who have a financial advisor, and that financial advisor is saying, stick with the stock market, it's coming back again. And, of course, I've talked to many of these people about possibly buying gold and silver, and they say, well, my financial advisor says that's not a good investment after all. I mean, a lot of people bought gold, you know, at the high point in 1980. They lost money. And besides that, the government might collect the gold. So we should stick with something we know something about, like stocks. Well, the second half of your book is Freeing Wealth. What should people do faced with the situation we see today, with a very real possibility that the market is going to collapse again? Certainly Richard Russell, within the last week, Richard Russell's been around since the beginning of time. When I got started 47 years ago, he was an old man, and he's still going strong, and he's telling people, just as last week, get out of every stock except gold and silver stocks. First time he said that, I can remember. But what do you recommend that people do?
Yes, we see a big lineup of people who are joining the traditional perennial bears, the gold bugs and the bears who are always seeing a collapse under every stone. The number of people who are moving into that area is frightening, because you don't ever want to be a real pessimist unless you have a need to be. There's just too much to be optimistic for in this world.